It's amazing sometimes that in a world at war with so much going on, we tend to get lost in Quebec. We tend to get lost in parochial particularities. We tend to get lost in our navel gazing. We tend to get lost in petty issues and really take our eye off the ball. I said this before on air. I'll say it again many, many times. We have to be thankful that we have a government, a national government, that has restored principle and pride and purpose to what we are as a country, and that is first and foremost and almost always defined by what a nation does in its foreign and defense policies. I don't know why we are even having a debate in this city and in many places across the country about the comments of our first guest and our very special guest. When Jason Kenney said yesterday that Hezbollah was like the Nazi Party, when Jason Kenney said yesterday that Lebanon should be grateful for the support of countries like Canada, the support for a military engagement that will free that country, that should be obvious to any student of history. And to discuss his remarks and Canadian reaction, we're privileged to have with us Jason Kenney, Parliamentary Secretary to the Prime Minister. Jason Kenney, welcome.
Good to be here, Bill.
I thought the most poignant part of your comments yesterday was not even the Hezbollah Nazi part. To me, that was obvious. This is an organization committed to the destruction of a nation, committed to the destruction of a people. But when you said that Lebanon should understand that the Prime Minister's position is not just support for a sister democracy, but Lebanon for the Lebanese, that if you look back at history, we're approaching the 68th anniversary of the Munich Agreement. If we had leaders of strength, like Prime Minister Harper, Czechoslovakia would not have been dismembered. Lebanon is now being dismembered. Why don't Canadians get that? Not dismembered by Israel, but dismembered by Iran that wants their share with a proxy government, dismembered by Syria, dismembered by Hezbollah that wants South Lebanon as a state within a state. Was that frustrating to you that a lot of Canadians didn't get it? Most Canadians did, but was it frustrating that a lot of Canadians didn't get it?
Well, it was and it is. I think it's frustrating but you know what? I understand why, because this Canada is a country that's never had a serious war on its own turf, at least for 200 years. And I think we're, by our national temperament, just a little bit naive. We find it hard to believe that people like the activists of Hezbollah could seriously be devoted to the annihilation of the Jewish state. And so you end up with people like politicians, Liberal MP Boris Wisniewski, Bloc MP Maria Morani, running around over there in the Middle East, who seem to think that Hezbollah and their fellow travelers are legitimate political parties in the style of North American or Western European parties. And they just have a basic naivete, the same kind of naivete that too many countries had in dealing with the rise of the Nazi Party in the 1930s. I think that the parallels are limited, but when we hear this defense of Hezbollah, they say, oh, it's a multifaceted organization. They have a military wing, a social wing, and a political wing that elects MPs, and has democratic popular support, and they work with the poor. All of those things were true of the National Socialist Workers Party in the 30s.
Yes.
If we do not learn from the lessons of history, we are bound to repeat them. So when people like Liberal MPs Wisniewski try to persuade the government of Canada to negotiate and treat as a legitimate political operation Hezbollah, he's undermining the whole hope of peace in the long run in that region.
And even if, and I raised this question in an article I wrote called The Obscenity of Appeasement, even if he changes his position as he waffled and then he said, well, I didn't really want them off the list, I just want the conditions for discussion to be made easier. What do we as Canadians have to discuss with an organization that treats women as second-class citizens, beheads women for having adulterous affairs, kills gays, doesn't believe in trade unionism, doesn't believe in democracy? What are we going to talk to them about? That's what was stunning to me, that he suggested that there was something that we should have truck with terror.
Just it, and this comes from people, politicians in Canada, who prattle on endlessly about Canadian values, tolerance and inclusiveness and diversity and peacefulness and all of this, and yet they go in and give political cover to an organization which is an enemy of all of those values, and which, by the way, isn't just interested in destroying Israel, but which is essentially anti-Semitic to its core. Why else would they have blown up the Jewish Community Center in Buenos Aires, Argentina? What what in the world does the Jewish community in Argentina have to do with the conflict in the Middle East? I'd like Boris Wisniewski to answer that question.
They won't, because they want to be politically correct, and they're driven not by principle, as I said in the introduction. I don't think that they understand principles anymore. I don't think they understand industrial liberalism. You know, a great small-L liberal named Winston Churchill, who, of course, became a conservative, the great wartime conservative leader and the great wartime leader of the West, said in 1911, when he was a member of a liberal government under Herbert Asquith, that part of being a liberal is the relief of oppression at home and abroad. That was part of liberal, classic industrial liberalism. It seems to me the Conservative Party is representing more of a big tent than the Liberal Party is today.
Well, I think we're representing what are real Canadian values. You know, when Canadian boys went to war to liberate Europe, they were representing those values. They weren't cowering here at home in a kind of the cover of appeasement or neutrality.
No, and we had.
I keep hearing this word neutrality.
We've never been neutral.
Who wants Canada to be neutral between terrorism and counterterrorism?
But we've never been neutral until the Kraken years started.
Well, who wants between democracy and a new form of fascism?
Precisely.
This is neutrality. We don't remember.
What is the famous line from Dante? The hottest places in hell are reserved for those who maintain their neutrality in a time of moral crisis. Never mind real crisis.
We don't remember the Quislings and the neutrals of Europe very kindly when we look back into the conflict of that period. And the reality is that, yes, Canadians hope and pray for peace in the region. We all felt the pain of many Lebanese Canadian families during that conflict last month. The reality is that conflict is not going to go away as long as Hezbollah continues to operate in the region, continues to try to exercise the powers of a state within a state to be a problem for Iran, and which tries to destabilize the region. As long as it is dedicated not to peace but to violence, not to a peace settlement but the destruction of Israel, there is going to be an ongoing problem, and we as Canadians need to overcome our natural naivete, which is a charming quality to have, but I'll tell you, it just isn't relevant.
It's dangerous in the real world.
That's right.
Jason Kenney, I know you're pressed for time. One more question and comment. We were doing a survey last night. We were talking to some journalists, and you know, there's been this whole discussion about Quebec and the rest of Canada. Quebec is more liberal on the Middle East questions. They're more tolerant about the Hezbollahs of the world. They forget that all these radical Islamist groups had their start with the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem being in Berlin in World War II. But last night we talked to Francophone journalists, and they told us that there's a disconnect in Quebec itself, that newspapers, that media outlets in Quebec City, the eastern townships, the Gatineau, are themselves now attacking those Quebec political leaders that went to pro-Hezbollah rallies, and they're attacking the Montreal-based Francophone media for being supportive of it. So it seems like there's a change in Quebec.
Yeah. You know what? You're saying something very interesting, because, you know, okay, granted, I'm an Albertan, but I spend a fair bit of time in Quebec, and, you know, I think we need to make a distinction between the pulse unique of the elites from the Plateau and Montreal and what the average Quebecer thinks on Main Street. And you know what? I don't think they're the same thing. I don't think the average Quebecer in Chicoutimi or Quebec City or in Trois-Rivières has an awful lot of tolerance for terrorism or terrorist organizations. I think they make a distinction, as do most Canadians, between democracy and terrorism. And so I think it's wrong to characterize the view of one province as being monolithic. I don't think that's the case at all, as we saw in the last election with the breakthrough of the Conservative Party in certain regions of Quebec, and I think that's going to continue. It's a common sense vote that's out there, and I think we're going to find it as we move forward to the next election.
And I think you're right, and I think people recognize, whether in Quebec or elsewhere, courage and principle, and they're looking for that leadership. And in fact, a Compass poll showed right after the infamous Globe and Mail poll that 2 out of 3 Quebecers, Francophone Quebecers, saw Hezbollah as a terrorist organization that had to be opposed. They simply weren't asked the question by the Globe and Mail, which tends to be the Liberal Party of prayer. And as long as we have leaders of purpose and courage and principle like yourself and the Prime Minister, the breakthroughs will continue in Quebec. Jason Kenney, I thank you very much for spending some time with us.
Appreciate it.
Montreal, we'll be back. As you just heard our conversation with Jason Kenney, Parliamentary Secretary to the Prime Minister, we hope, we think that this country is finally getting it, that perhaps Jason Kenney's most important remarks yesterday were not comparing Hezbollah to Nazis, but saying that Lebanon has to understand that they should be grateful to Western leaders like Prime Minister Harper that are encouraging the liberation of their country. It's Lebanon for the Lebanese. This is not 1938 when Western powers allowed the dismemberment of the Czech Republic, Britain and France forcing President Beneš to accept any conditions from Germany. Lebanon is today's Czech Republic. Curiously, it's not Israel. It's Lebanon they're all after. The Shia Muslims, led by Nasrallah and his Hezbollah gangs in the south, want a state within a state. Iran wants a proxy government. Syria wants their territory. 1938, the Sudetenland in the west was given to Germany out of the Czech Republic. Teschen in the east was given to Poland. And instead of fighting and stopping Hitler in the Czech Republic, the world was dragged into war. And hopefully Canada, through all the daycare crises and all the other issues that somehow clouds our vision of a world at war and a world in a very, very serious time, as we discussed yesterday with John O'Sullivan, a very different temper of the time today, is going to start to get it. And if it does start to get it, it's going to be due to bold political leadership at the national level, which we're seeing, but also to bold citizen engagement. And particularly the efforts of our next guest, Alistair Gordon, president of the Canadian Coalition for Democracies. Alistair Gordon, welcome.
Thank you, Beryl. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Al Gordon, a storehouse, a voice of reason and sanity. Are Canadians getting it?
Yes, I think increasingly Canadians are getting it. There are some in whose best interests it does not lie to get it, and they are remaining blind to the obvious. But I think increasingly, at least our government is getting it. And Jason Kenney's comparison of Hezbollah to Nazis is about the mildest analogy for Hezbollah that I could think of. I can't imagine anybody thinking that that is too extreme a comparison when you consider the similarities between the Nazi Party and Hezbollah.
The idea that today, you know, of course, when you open a door and when you have political waffling, and we're talking about the Liberal MP, Boris Vyshinsky, I'm twisting on his name, Boris Vyshinsky, who backtracked on his comments about removing Hezbollah from the terror list and then said all he wanted was a change in conditions to talk to them. When you open the door even that much, you come to where we were today in this country, where two national Muslim groups now demand that Hezbollah be taken off the terror list because the door is open. And, of course, they found Mr. Kenney's comments deplorable, but they didn't quite say where he was wrong. But the opening of the door by the Liberals, or by this Liberal, and the fellow MPs who are with him, now are we going to have a new debate now about taking Hezbollah off a terror list? Or, you know, are we mature enough to accept that there is good and evil in the world?
Well, I think, these three opposition MPs from the Liberal, NDP, and Bloc parties have fairly effectively been silenced in their expression of this just unfathomable absurdity. It really shows how little they know, how little of history they know. The Nazi Party, likewise, built hospitals, roads. Their famous Autobahn was one of their greatest public works projects.
They made the trains run on time.
They made the trains run on time. And making the trains run on time does not mean that we need to deal with, support, or strengthen a party whose charter calls for the destruction of a neighboring nation. I mean, we have to remember that these people are telling us that we need to open the door to a leader like Nasrallah, who has not only called for the complete destruction of Israel and the driving of all Jews from the Middle East.
That's Section 7 of their charter.
That's Section 7 of their charter. But he has further asked that all Jews kindly return to Israel so that they won't have to hunt them down around the world.
Now that would make it convenient for them.
That would make it very convenient for them. And this is not sufficiently offensive to this Liberal, NDP, and Bloc member of Parliament to basically put Hezbollah beyond the pale as far as they're concerned.
What is it about Canada that accepts apologies all the time. In other words, we've got a considerable segment of the population is willing to say, okay, yeah, we agree. Hezbollah wants to destroy Israel. Hezbollah, Nasrallah, in his speeches, wants to kill Jews. Yeah, obviously we get the connection, but let's not talk about it. Maybe he'll talk. You're involved in the expansion of the democratic experiment in Canada and making Canadians understand that for that to succeed here, it's got to be, they've got to be engaged abroad. It's got to succeed abroad. How do you react when Canadian apologists say, it's okay, let's forgive them that, they have a right to be wrong, let's hope they'll do better?
Well, what I think it is, and it's a very similar fundamental a breach of judgment that Paul Heinbecker, the former Canadian ambassador, made recently when he was giving his reasons for Islamic terror around the world and citing all the various grievances suffered by Muslims in various parts of the world, specifically in the Middle East. What I think the fundamental problem here is that these people, these very well-intentioned liberals, cannot imagine that there is a species in the world very different from they are, that there is a species that does not share their liberal pluralistic values. There's a species that does not understand give and take. And as a result, they project their own sentiments, their own feelings, how they would respond to a situation onto these people. And they struggle to find responses to their foes' murderous behavior that would explain such depravity were it to occur among their own Western liberal pluralistic peers.
Al Gordon, if you could just stay with us. We're just going to break for the news, and we've got the lines lighting up. We'll be right back, Montreal. You can email us at info@iepm.ca, and tonight we're talking about whether Canada is getting it, why we're even discussing the comments by Jason Kenney comparing Hezbollah to the Nazis. That's a legitimate and normal historical comparison. It's almost downplayed. And with us now is Al Gordon, the president of the Canadian Coalition for Democracies, and we've been talking about what a task it is to get Canadians to accept responsibility and engagement in the democratic process, and to understand the democratic process has got to be secured abroad for it to be secured at home. Al Gordon, thanks for staying with us for the news.
Pleasure.
We forget the historical comparisons. What is it? We were talking before the break and before the news about the apologetic mentality of Canadians.
Well, again,
how hard is that going to be to change?
Well, I think there is a bit of a sea change needed, and the realization that has to emerge, and in some of us it emerged a long time ago, is that we are dealing with a foe who does not share our values, who does not share our goals, who does not share our sense of give and take. There are some within this country, including members of the opposition, who seem to propose that we negotiate with Hezbollah as if there is a give and take that can leave them satisfied. And yet it should be obvious there is no give and take short of the genocide of all Jews in the Middle East and the destruction of the State of Israel. It's not that we even have to guess at that. It is their charter. It is their statement. Hezbollah, we should remind everyone, is the armed tip of Iran, whose president has called for the nuclear annihilation of Israel. So it does not take a great deal of digging to understand what they want, what their motives are, and why they are non-negotiable. So really, the
almost as importantly, non-negotiable in terms of what we value as Canadians in a liberal, pluralistic society. We can't negotiate away our freedoms, which is exactly what they want.
Correct.
Not just physical destruction. They want spiritual destruction.
Their brand of Islam means submission, and there's nothing other than submission that will end the violence and the terror. And unless we are prepared to give them absolute submission, we do not have an option of negotiating or accommodating them, only of defeating them. And that is the job that Israel was handed very unfairly by the rest of the Western world, because the battle of Israel against Hezbollah was not a regional conflict. It was the same war that is being fought in London, Madrid, the Philippines, Egypt, and with the arrest of the 17 in Toronto, right here in our own backyard.
Al Gordon from Toronto, president of the Canadian Coalition for Democracies. Thanks very much for spending the time with us.
Thank you, Beryl.
Thank you, Al.
Bye now.
Steve from downtown.
Yeah, hi, Beryl.
How are you?
I'm okay. You know, I hate to shatter your false sense of security, but I was reading...
I have no sense of security.
Okay, well, I was reading...
I think it's a very insecure time.
Okay, can I make my point?
Sure.
Okay, I was reading the latest edition of The Economist, where it says Nasrallah won the war, and they had a very interesting poll in it, and contrary to what you believe, you know, Quebecers aren't out of the mainstream. Almost every single country in the world believes that Israel's response to those kidnappings was way over the top. As a matter of fact, it's three-quarters, 75% in Europe.
Just well, I don't think any country has to fight for its life based on polls or proportionality. And Israel's response against Hezbollah wasn't for the kidnappings. It was for the 1,000 Qassam rocket attacks in Gaza and the dozens of Katusha rocket attacks that came before the kidnappings.
No, but...
And if it was tactically, an error to commit more of an air war than an air and ground war, that was really up to Israel as the aggressed nation, not the aggressor party, to determine.
No,
thank you for your opinion, Steve. We'll be right back. Fundamentally, the issues that take up so much of our front pages today, we hope, are to do justice. And today, many of our stories were brushed aside as of 4 o'clock because of our next guest, who does justice. He doesn't just talk about justice. He walks the walk, and he does justice. And almost every file that Julius Gray represents has a great import for our society, but today's truly touches almost every household in the province, and we're very pleased and honored, as we always are, when Julius Gray has time to spend with us. Julius Gray, welcome.
Hi.
All right. Now, I have tried to understand this whole daycare debate. I really have. And you can be my professor and treat me like I'm simple and stupid, which many people think I am.
Well, you're certainly not stupid.
What is the issue with this government? You are representing, as of 4 o'clock, a coalition of, and I'll let you finish the sentence.
Daycare owners who want to respect the $7 rule, but who also want to offer optional, not obligatory, additional courses in music or
plus value, added value,
or dance, etc., to the children. And somehow, the province of Quebec, through a fundamentally right-wing government, manages to come up with what I can only consider a Maoist solution. No,
only Julius Gray could. I have to repeat that. A fundamentally right-wing government has come up with a Maoist solution. Okay.
No additional courses. Learning is bad for you. Just stick to the average and behave.
Okay, now remind me. Wasn't this government, like during the election, didn't Jean Charest talk about private, public partnerships, how great that would be, more options for the people?
He did. And you see, I was afraid that he would go too far the other way most of the time. I was afraid that he was going to do away with the social justice system, and I still have worries about two-tier medicine and things of that sort. But here, it's not a two-tier matter. Everybody's entitled to $7. Everybody expects it.
Right.
It's the idea of putting in a regulation that you can't learn more. It's prohibited. Even if everybody else is guaranteed, there can be no possible victim. There can be no injustice to anyone. You can't teach the extra thing. And you see, in the
now
past,
because is this another part of bringing everything down to the lowest common denominator?
Well, it seems to be one, but it's entirely pointless. I'll give you an example. When Quebec had a rule that you couldn't teach English in grade 1 and 2,
right,
it was asinine. But at the same time, it was backed by some pedagogical opinion, which I think was misguided. But nevertheless, at least they said it's in the interest of the child because you won't learn your French properly unless you have 3 years of French alone and then you introduce English. I think it's thoroughly discredited as a theory, but at least it purported to be. a pedagogical thing. But there is no pedagogical argument that children should not, during those daycare hours, be taught music or dance or computers or some science or be given, taken to the museum and in addition to everything else. There's just no argument. It's a form of leveling of everything that makes no sense. That's why I use the word Maoism.
Okay, now, was this, as I understand it, there are four levels in the daycare system. Is this because of the pressure that the parental daycares, the parents' daycares brought to bear in the last session against any change in the system?
Yeah, no. The change, if there was no change in the system, we'd be happy. In 97, when they set up these things, what they did was they set up permitted private daycares, for-profit daycares, but they gave them a certain amount less. Today it's $7 less per child. And therefore, they have to compete. But the way they compete is by offering additional services and or having better overhead or whatever. And what the government has now suddenly done is said, offer the same extra services for free. But that's in the field of magical realism. It would take Isabel Allende or somebody like that, or Garcia Marquez, to describe that, because you can't offer in a society where everything is accounted for, and you know that's inevitable. You can't offer services for free, not unless you have access to infinite government funds. It comes down, back down to the, I don't think it's the public daycares, I think it's the government that suddenly decided to take the private daycares and tell them, provide those extra services for free. And how they can think anybody can do it is ridiculous. And I guess the answer is, they don't expect anybody to do it. You know, the wonderful example could be given by, I don't know if you know the story of the Stakhanovites, when Stalin set up quotas by taking some workers and giving them wonderful conditions and getting a fantastic output from them, then taking their output and telling other workers, here's the quota.
Yes.
You don't get the conditions.
I think you and I and our fathers may be the four people left who remember that or know anything about that.
Yeah, but, it is mind-boggling. Now, this is not a legal argument that I'm giving. I'm simply talking about the fact that I am shocked that in this province, in this country, in this continent, somebody would pass a law against learning.
Okay. Now, a very brief answer, because we're going to come back right after the break. Shouldn't the whole system be cleaned up and the right signal sent? I mean, if a government says daycare is essential, as Mr. Parizo said, because we want families to be able to have children, and we want the mothers to be back in the workforce faster, isn't it incumbent upon them to put that as part of the educational system? Or, if they don't have money, as you said, isn't it incumbent upon them to make some kind of partnerships and leave some kind of liberty in the system for the people to decide?
I think there could be a better system than the one we have. But in fact, we'd be perfectly happy with the one we have as long as they don't interpret it the way they're doing it, against additional...
And courses. This question of interpretation is what the point of your challenge is, and I want you to explain it briefly when we come back, and we'll get on to another topic as well. Montreal will be right back with Julius Gray. Or email us at info@iapm.ca. And our special guest is Julius Gray, and we're talking about his challenge to the provincial government's restrictions on daycare. And we were just getting onto this, Julius. Your challenge is an administrative law challenge seeking an interpretation of the current law, not seeking to reverse the law, but seeking to an interpretation of the law.
Well, the problem is the minister has come up with an interpretation, which I find unpalatable.
Is it unpalatable, or is it just it's completely divorced from reality of what the word says?
It's a dreadful thing. But the thing is, the regulation that they've adopted doesn't necessarily say what the minister says. It's open to interpretation. We're asking for an interpretation that's consistent with our view. What they say is nobody can, and they use the French word, exiger a payment beyond the normal one.
Now, do you interpret that as being nobody can force?
And therefore, that doesn't mean nobody can offer as an alternative. As long as you do not discriminate, you do not put people in a position where they have to take the extra course, I think you're fine. You haven't exigé. You've said you can have your basic course, and it's very good. It fulfills all the requirements of Quebec. We also have an additional option. We're not requiring that you take it. So I think that the interpretation I give is a rational and reasonable one.
Now, as much of legislation, sometimes, you'd know better than I, but sometimes, and I think it's rare times, law and legislation, rule and regulation is left purposely vague or something missing, like that other word, you cannot force, but it doesn't say anything about offering. Was that bad drafting, or was that intentional, you think?
Well, I have no idea. You can't know what went on in their mind.
But for,
if they meant to pass a law saying you can't, no matter what, then they drafted it very badly.
They failed in that.
I would have said no one may accept any payment or whatever. If, on the other hand, they meant at that point to say what I want them to say, then they drafted it quite well, and I think that's what it means. Now, I have an additional argument. If I were to be ruled wrong on the interpretation, then I say the regulation is illegal, it's ultra vires. Not on a constitutional ground, but simply because it's not authorized by the law. Law on daycare centers
does not allow them to make such a restriction.
Does not allow them to prohibit additional teaching. I think there's all sorts of presumptions that work against this. The parents' freedom of choice, the right to free use of property unless specifically restricted, which it hasn't been. The right to, common sense. The fact that prohibiting learning appears to be a particularly reprehensible type of thing, which should not be done except on grounds of the child's best interest. You know, the way they argued at one point that teaching English too early was dangerous because you wouldn't learn your French properly. Well, that at least had, a pedagogical ground, however incorrect. I have, if you like, a two-prong challenge. The first one is simply regulation, saying what's wrong, what is the problem is not the regulation, it's the minister's interpretation. The minister sent a circular saying that, so we're challenging effectively that. And the second one, if we were to be wrong on that, the validity of the regulation.
Julius Gray, thanks very much for joining us.
It's
the right
pleasure.
To common sense. If anybody keeps us on the straight and narrow in our society, it's you. Good luck to you. More power to you.
It's a pleasure.
That's all we have time for, Montreal. We'll be back with you tomorrow night. Thank you to Chris Smith and Master Control. We're out of here.